send in the clowns. Send in the clowns. I don't know any of the other words.
I was gonna say, if you were going to like pull off the entire song, I was gonna be really impressed, because in no way when I woke up this morning and considered what song is Kate gonna pull from the depths of her bowels this morning. I did not think Sondheim would be the first place that we landed, but I have to say I appreciated it. It's very apropos for this gloomy day.
I opened up the window and saw it, and then a wet dog came running in, and it's just like such beautiful permission to cut the shit and just watch old episodes of Nailed It. Which is my new comfort show, by the way.
I love that. I love that.
Because you don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
It's just on.
Yeah.
People failing at baking in the background. And it is the quiet din that creates the cocoon that I can handle right now.
Fair. That's very fair.
So we've got big news.
Huge news.
It's your news. Share it.
I'm an auntie.
Oh!
Caroline was born on Wednesday, July 7th. It's very, very exciting. I don't know. I'm just very thrilled to go meet this child in a couple of weeks. So,
how does that new title feel? It comes with a lot of responsibility to be the first one to hand Caroline her magnum of, let's go with Pinot. But you'll wait at least till her 15th birthday.
I'm just very excited to, you know, spoil the shit out of this kid.
And as aunt, your work is to be the truth teller.
Yes.
But I'm going to pull you aside at a Christmas party and tell you why Uncle Tim is drinking so much.
We actually have an Uncle Tim. Kate was not referring to.
Oh, no. Sorry, Uncle Tim. Oh, perfect.
This is a fictional Tim.
Yes.
The archetypal. So that's very exciting. First child amongst my siblings also happened on the same day of my first colonoscopy. So it was just a roller coaster of a
some goes in, some comes out. Oh, how was the first colonoscopy?
Oh, you know, it's the prep that kills you.
This is out of my pay grade.
It was fine. Definitely not how I wanted to spend my week, though.
Wow.
All
good? Any findings yet?
I think it's all good. Yeah.
Unrolled, where we discuss every diagnosis.
Every diagnosis there is.
Our slow roll into middle age.
Exactly. I the small talk with the nurse while she was like getting my IV ready and like trying to talk about like, well, what do you do? Oh, you're a yoga teacher. I was like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. And
then it's just very like, flexible. Just I tried like, yoga, but I hated it. I did a couple videos with yoga with Adrian. Is this right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I just wanted to be like, just get the fucking IV in and leave me alone. She was very sweet, but I was just like, I don't want to talk about this.
But it is funny how people, yeah, never tell people you're a yoga teacher.
Never, never.
Tell them you're a gymnast.
My go-to is I tell people that I'm a consultant, which is true. We do consult for Patient Moon. Like that is technically what we do for folks. But it is a word that ceases to have any meaning whatsoever. So it's pretty good at,
I know it's so ambiguous. You say it, you're like, I'm a consultant. You're like, okay, like you're an advice giver. You're in the mafia. Yeah. What does that fucking mean?
Yeah, so that's my go-to.
It always sounds like you're richer than you are, though.
Truth. Yeah.
Oh, consultant.
So what's the news in your world, Kate? Someone is bringing you some sort of beverage.
That's the real news. Somebody just brought me a my coffee. I'm eating an old chocolate bar with raisins in it, which there should be a criminal fine for putting raisins in a chocolate bar. It has no place. I've got all kinds of news. None of it which I can share.
Thanks, Jay Brown. You have to deliver this in Jay's voice now.
No, it's just like, you know, there's a lot of hubbub in the yoga world. And hubbub. And, you know, I've got some interesting I'm on my, I started a new biologic and I think it might be helping. I have some mornings where I wake up and I don't want to jump immediately into a tar pit. So why would I want to jump into a tar pit? Also, I just found out that it's possible Ed Sullivan and JFK had AS.
Oh.
I doubt JFK. Maybe, who knows? Just look for the stoop that occurs more in men with, I don't know. I had my year diagnosis, my year since sort of my very first flare that ended up, you know, sending me to the urgent care or ER or whatever the fuck you want to call it. And it was the 4th of July last year. And I think of like, okay, so in this last year, you know, what has happened? It's like, okay, well, I got a diagnosis, which is way sooner than most people. And I've been through, I'm on my second biologic, actually technically, and I still am very much in the denial shock. You know, it's interesting, like when you think about the area, the steps of grief or whatever, and I bounce around a lot, and I still mostly am like, no, I'm gonna wake up tomorrow and it's just gonna be gone. It's just not a thing. And I think that that's normal. I will say that social media, is good for some things. And one of the things it's good for is I'm connected with people from all over the world who have just got their AS diagnosis or whatever. And, there are people a lot younger than me getting it. And so they're immediately stepping into the role of like advocacy awareness. I think that's what I wanted to talk about, is like, when you have some bad news, medical, personal, whatever, there is, and I'm one of them. It's like stepping into like, okay, well, I'm going to make this journey public and I'm going to step into a role of advocacy and like an awareness producer. And then for many of those people, I'm going to monetize.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what a great way to make lemonade out of lemons, I guess. But there's also part of me that, I'm not seeking to monetize. I still have a private Instagram account. I'm not trying to gain a bunch of followers. But, I'm grateful for the people that do it. But also, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, it can kind of be this conundrum of like, that urge to sort of create a platform around, it's like the urge to create a platform around what you're going through to spread awareness, to be an advocate. And then because we're in a capitalist society, that takes up so much time that you almost have no choice but to figure out how to monetize it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise otherwise you won't have enough resources to keep doing the it's a very unfortunate cycle, and then you get exhausted from doing the advocacy and awareness work, and then especially if what you're raising awareness around is has something to do with some sort of medical or mental health or diversity or whatever it is that takes an understandable kind of toll on your energy level, then you end up getting burnt out, and then the cycle has and that doesn't help anything. And it's not a, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's a, some of the things I see like immediately is like, oh, I find a lot of relief from this CBD gummy product, or gosh, I love these heating pads.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess if it was a product I cared about and I actually used, I would have no problem slapping up a link to get some cheap myself. But there's just, and I appreciate it. I do. I follow all these people. I'm grateful every time I see it. I'm like, it's a reminder for me, like, oh, okay, this is a thing. You're not alone. You're not losing.
Yeah.
You're not completely losing your mind, Robinson. There's other people, waking up with.
Yeah.
With this too. So in short, I'm grateful for it. And I kind of want to awkwardly pivot to this other thing and phenomena I'm seeing post-COVID, which is there are the capitalization on rest culture.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple accounts, most of them run by artists and nonprofit owners, and a lot of it is around the relationship of productivity, rest, grind culture, and race. And it's beautiful work. The NAP ministry is one. I'm going to get the other handle right. So if I, like, you know, prepared for these episodes, I would have these right at the tip of my tongue. That's not how we roll.
No, we cannot be prepared, which is why every attempt to monetize this podcast has failed, because we just...
Octavia Rahim is another account. And it's... I'm so grateful for those two accounts. They dedicate, you know, their content to pushing back against basically the pathology of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, both of them have said, hey, white lady yoga teachers, we're not talking about you promoting, you know, your fucking restorative or slow flow or whatever. This isn't meant to be twisted into a way to work more and make money off of this idea. And yet, all over the place, you know, I see, like, oh, it's cool now. It's getting cool to promote rest and doing less, but they're not doing it in the same way that,
yeah,
you know. And I don't, and they also had a essay about how if you're teaching a whole bunch of, like, restorative classes, if you're teaching a whole bunch of classes, your work probably sucks because you're not resting yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, but then it just harkens back to, okay, people are just trying to make a living.
And one of the ways that they're, you know, that I'm seeing very, very quickly pop up. In fact, that's really been my whole, is what I've been seeing on my, mostly on my feet, is the reemergence of the in-person teacher training. Which I, you know, don't get me wrong, like, I understand that from a financial point of view, like, yeah, I would be way better off if I just decided, you know what, I'm going to run 3 teacher trainings a year and just try to get, like, 10 people in each one of them and call it a day. Like, that would be a really solid business plan. But, like, I don't. There are 2 things that stop me when my mind goes down that road. Well, maybe more than 2. One is there's the acknowledgement that it is the pre-existing groove that, like, the quote unquote industry has been in for 20 plus years, and like acknowledging that, like, that's the easy route. Like, that I need to, like, veer away from that, because it's not sustainable, because once you go down that route, you have to keep going. The pivot is so hard to find something that makes an equivalent amount of money. 2 is that I'm just so fucking exhausted that, like, I don't really want to put together that big of a program. The, like, heavy lifting that it would be to try and mount something like that by myself just feels insurmountable.
Content-wise or marketing?
Marketing-wise. Not content-wise, I could throw it together in an afternoon. It's just, like, that's what makes it so tempting. It's like all of the materials are there. It's you know, it would be the kind of marketing and having to say, oh, this is why this teacher training is different. And the truth is that the reason that anything that I would do would be different is because it isn't a fucking teacher training. It's just like, let's have a more in-depth study of practice together. Now I lost my train of thought. But anyways, like I see all of these popping up and I'm just like, it just, you know, we've been saying this like a broken record, like this is the opportunity to do something different. And everyone's just jumping back into the same old shit. This is the opportunity to reimagine how pricing works. This is the opportunity to reimagine how your relationships to your teachers are established. This is the opportunity to come up with different models as to how you actually train new teachers. This is the opportunity to this is the opportunity.
And what would that require, Ryan, for people to make that leap?
What would that require? Lots of things, but the first thing that comes to mind is like slowing down.
Well, I think what you have is like the government has lifted so many of the restrictions, and there's like a first out of the gate mentality.
Yes.
And let's put off the more radical changes. Let's just get back to survival mode. I'm just putting on my old empathy cap where it's like,
and trust me, I mean, I'm sitting here with a very low overhead situation, right? Like, this is a very privileged place to sit from, but it's also like, in some ways, a responsibility for me to jump up and down and say, hey, everybody stop. Stop. We're just gonna crawl into the same fucking hole and we're all gonna be out of like we're gonna be exactly back where we were in a year, struggling to get these teacher trainings filled and feeling like if we don't do the teacher trainings that the whole studio is gonna go under, and like it's just gonna be it'll just be back to the same old stuff. And so I absolutely 100% empathize with the like, shit, we just got to get back to a baseline. Because I don't have the pressure of rent, my mind is able to go to, okay, well, what would something else look like? And the truth is like, I don't know. And the only thing that's clear to me is that big is not the answer.
Well, I think first of all, you have to see a problem with teacher trainings as a whole.
Yeah.
You have to be uncomfortable with all of this already before you you have to have an issue with the fact that we're just cranking out teachers that are, you know, flooding the market and there aren't that many jobs, and then it becomes what fuels the race to the bottom in terms of filling the class with the cutest, you know, fast vinyasa teacher.
Well, also, is like there's the question that I always have, like, is this an actual job? Like, yes, there's dynamics of sort of labor and management in the sort of classical sense, but like, in many ways, it feels like this is just a thing I do that somehow I've managed to pay my bills with partially. But it's not like a, there's not really a career trajectory other than just like I wake up in the morning and say, oh, who am I going to teach today? And am I going to be able to pay the rent this month? And like, on some level, that can be really like panicky. And on another level, it's like, actually, I don't know that I would want anything different. I don't really want everybody, like, you look around and like, how many people do you know, like, people do you see online now that are the sort of stereotypical, you know, it used to be the sort of stereotypical, like, slender, fit vinyasa teacher, and now it's just transitioned into the like slender, fit, trauma-informed yoga therapist. Like, we're just like moving the same issues around and slapping different names on it. Like, I don't even know what, when I look around and see what's happening in sort of advertisements and on the marketplace, I don't know what a trauma-informed yoga therapist is or does. But it doesn't seem like it's much different than what the average yoga teacher is doing.
It's not. Well, let me just tweak that. The average yoga teacher, honestly, Oh, I want to say some ugly things. I don't think our most sensitive, critically engaged, higher level thinkers are drawn to yoga teacher trainings.
You some don't are. Think. Oh, no, okay.
I
don't. Yeah.
I know. Some are, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Or I wouldn't do this. There's always one or two in each teacher training where you're like, oh, thank God they're here. There is a lot of opportunism, or what they think is opportunity, that for people that have just been in wellness and wellness adjacent businesses, that, or people that were, they love yoga and they're a former dancer / gymnast, or somebody that loves Pilates and wants to blah, 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 blah. There's a lot of that. And there's nothing wrong with that. It just means that people aren't necessarily coming to the table with a level of awareness and or sensitivity towards these things that would make the average class trauma, quote unquote, informed. So we have to have this trainings, because who we attract to teacher trainings requires that.
Yeah.
There is so much ableism. There is so much, and that's the thing that's just mind blowing. It's like, what? That would be a thing for someone? Like, yeah, try a little harder and imagine not being you.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people only being able to see as far as their own feet. So, yeah, one would hope.
Which is
the average class would be trauma informed, but it is so far from that.
So, and I'm not really sure what I'm not really sure what in fact that would I'm not really sure what, in fact, that would entail, because I think what people assume is that a class that would be quote unquote trauma informed would be 100% safe for everybody in that room. And that's not the case. Like, there's no way for me to know the internal experience of every single person that's in the room. And I have to balance the fact that, like, there's probably going to be something that I say that could be really, that it has the potential to be really triggering in a way that I can't foresee. Like,
of course, and good trauma-informed trainings address that day one. We're not here to create a bell jar. We're not here to remove triggers. We're here to be more aware of, through the five senses, what primarily can be. And you'll notice a lot of them are in direct opposition with each other.
Exactly.
So the work is to know that you don't know, and to be able to create a space wherein people hopefully feel more comfortable leaving, you know?
Yes.
It's equipping the student with more choice, which is something you already do inherently, but most teachers don't.
But I think where that conversation can go a little bit awry is, well, two ways that then, like, you take the training and you sort of slap that on your bio and use it as a, like, marketing tool, which, like, I don't actually think, like, given the pervasiveness of that phrase, if someone was really dealing with some, like, serious acute trauma and they saw trauma-informed slapped in front of everybody's name at a yoga studio, like, I think that might raise some, like, some red flags. But as you've said before, like, usually when you read someone's bio, you can kind of get a better sense of like, this person might be okay to check out, or there's just, like, a general, like, word of mouth.
Or at least this person gave enough of a shit to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think there's the marketing aspect, but then I also think that it has the potential to like, the way you just described it is broadening the conversation of what's possible in practice and in a room, and broadening awareness of what could be beneficial or detrimental to a student's experience, right? But oftentimes what I see is it actually narrows in a sort of never do this, never do that, never do this, never do that, never do this, never do that. Which is the same conversation 10 years ago that used to happen about certain poses, right? And now we're just translating it into a different sphere. Like, students used to go take trainings and I'd come back and then I'd teach bridge pose and they would say that I'm, you know, an irresponsible yoga teacher for teaching bridge pose because someone could have a stroke. That was like the 10 years ago conversation. And it, how you choose to teach, if it's this checkbox system of never do this, always do that, never do this, always do that, it ceases to be a conversation of how can I actually be helpful for all of the variables that are going on in the room. And for some people, when we're in a situation where this is, you know, a thing again, when we really are, like, back in person, for some people, that actually does include touch. And for others, it absolutely does not. And everywhere in between. And figuring out the dynamics of that is just is an ongoing exploration. It's not a series of boxes you can check off by going to some kind of weekend training, nor is going to, in the same way that going to a 200-hour training doesn't then sort of end your education. But for many people, it does, because they're like, okay, now I'm fully equipped to do all of the things. And I barely feel equipped to do all of the things. And I have had considerable amounts of practice and study and training. There's still things that just kind of are big question marks to me.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that right now, trauma-informed training's band-aids. Well, that's what you get when you fight, you assholes. They're band-aids.
Yeah.
Meant to patch over an egregious hole that is left by the average 200-hour. And quite frankly, by the average 200-hour lead teacher.
Yeah.
You know, in a utopian future, we wouldn't need a trauma-informed training because it would just be part of the regular curriculum on how to deal with how to effectively teach whoever's in front of you, which means being able and nimble enough to change your class plan. I mean, like, this is ultimately kind of the heart of it. And we don't do that in a 200-hour training because we're just trying to get people to be able to stand up in front of a room without shitting their pants.
But I feel like that just goes back to the argument of, like, throw the whole thing out. Start from, like, even the structure of the fact there's even a hours, that these hours numbers exist, like, It almost is this barrier to reimagining because we have this arbitrary Yoga Alliance 200 and 300 thing that, like, people just get so caught in this box of, like, we have to do it this way because that's the thing. Like, let's just throw the goddamn thing out and start over again. And I don't think we'd come back with a 200-hour training. I think we'd come back with something radically different. But everyone's too afraid there won't be a market for it because it's the only thing that makes any money, which is the only thing that's keeping the studios afloat. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this kind of endless circular. It's like, I don't want to go back to the time of people just come and take class. And when the teacher is sick, the teacher goes, hey, you've been coming to class a lot. You get up there and teach. I don't want to go all the way back to that. But there is something really intelligent about that.
Maybe.
Because because at least back then, like, that usually meant that student was, you know, studying a lot. And yeah, they would just get up in front of the class and parrot.
That's what I was going to say.
The teacher.
They're the most adept at, like, parroting.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's in some ways a better.
I mean, that's start. What we're doing with 200 hour too. Just learn how to parrot your lead.
Yes, but those people most of the time have not been in the lead person's class for years and years and years. Learning from them and you know. Not just picking up these little, like, parrotable cues about what to do with this and what to do with that. They have experienced the sort of accumulative study with that person for more than 200 hours. So I think there has to, whatever switch went off that went from that system to, okay, now everyone's got to do a 200-hour training. We just have to unswitch that and go, okay, we don't want to go all the way back to that, but this is just untenable and really just exists for the purposes of making money. So what's a different path? And then everyone goes and finds their different path. And yeah, you're going to get a lot of bullshit that comes out of that exploration. But like, we already have a lot of bullshit.
It does, on some level, feel like just like shutting the door behind you.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I benefited from the completion of a 200-hour. Let me be very clear. I benefited from the completion of the 200-hour.
Sure.
That little piece of paper was required as a requirement for entry. You know, that was my ticket to the football field. So I don't like closing the door behind me, because now I see problems with it. I saw problems with it when I was taking it. I don't know.
But I think the issue here, like, I wouldn't, if 200 and 300 hour trainings existed without being the only way to actually make significant amounts of money, the fact that it has become the sole profit center for everybody in the yoga business, that's the problem, because then they can't evolve. Because anything that bucks the 200 hour system, everyone's too scared to do it because it won't meet Yoga Alliance, and then they're afraid that people won't do it.
I don't think people give a shit about Yoga Alliance anymore.
Students do, yeah. I've in marketing and talking to students about it, students are very, Yoga Alliance has done a great job of not
being the daddy in the room.
Not advertising that they are not a certifying body. They don't advertise that they are, but they don't advertise that they're. I'm triple negative myself. Yeah,
they imply that they are.
They imply that they are. Yes. Now, I think there is a when you talk to people at Yoga Alliance when I was doing the training that was just training people one-on-one, they were utterly flummoxed by why I would do that. And they were like, well, it really has to be 200 hours. I'm like, you don't think that my time one-on-one working with someone is a different exchange than one person teaching 100 people? And they're like, well, that's just how we have it set up. And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, you got to help me out here then, because like, I'm not going to charge people $125 times 200 to do 200 one-on-one sessions. Like that's just not going to work. And like, it's overkill. Because fundamentally I just want them to have a foundation for practice. And then like, if they want to go teach, I'll help them with teaching. And because this, you imply yourselves as a certifying body, like, I would like them to have a piece of paper that, like, at least shows completion of something. And we worked it out. I don't think we would have been able to work it out with the new standards. The only reason we were able to work it out is because the standards were so lax previously, that we were able to like wiggle things around. But it's just, I lost my train of thought. We were saying, oh, you were saying that you don't think people care about yoga. I don't think they care, but once they start doing research, they find this Yoga Alliance thing and they're like, oh, this looks official. Let me look for trainings that are Yoga Alliance registered.
I just don't know that. I guess some people do, but it's really the uninitiated that are giving a shit about.
Yeah. Also, I think it's different. Like, you're probably in a position where people are talking to you about trainings from a like content perspective because of the collaborativeness of the trainings at Down Under. But like when people would talk to me at Down Under, at Bow Street, at Back Bay, I was talking to them about content, like, and about the like nuts and bolts of like payment plans and like all of this stuff. And so Yoga Alliance would come up almost every single time I had that conversation with folks. Ugh.
Snooze.
Yes, agreed. And then I would say to them, Yoga Alliance doesn't certify you, we certify you. Whoever the we was in that, you know, in that context. And yeah, so I think the whole thing, like, this all gets back to like more than just teacher trainings. It's just that teacher training is such like a huge component of what keeps studios afloat. But like everything about the studio model, like this is the opportunity to redo it. And I don't see anybody redoing it. I see people closing and choosing to do other things with their lives, which is one way. But yeah, this is the opportunity. And hey, if people are listening, they're like, actually, I work at a studio or I'm a studio owner and we are reimagining things in a really interesting way, please email us and let us know that, because I would love to see some examples of that. I'm just not seeing it from a sort of bird's eye view, and also obviously having conversations with lots of people who own studios in various places around the country. It's a lot more of the same.
Okay, so here's my question, Ryan. I think
that that rivaled my pause.
I think we should all just stop teaching.
Yeah.
Like, what a shitty thing for me to say. What a shitty thing to say. I guess what it is I'm genuinely right now, for a variety of reasons, cannot rest on just one reason. Really thinking about stopping to teach, stopping teaching. And I think what it is in order to have a relationship with the practice that I care about, I gotta let go of teaching.
Yeah.
And there is so much suspicion I have toward other teachers. My suspicion is this. I feel like everyone's a bullshit artist and nobody's practicing, and this is a performance art.
Mm-hmm.
And I look around and there's so few people I want to practice with that I feel like that alone is an invitation for me to hit the pause button.
Yeah.
Because even amongst the quote unquote, if I hear the word master teacher again, I'm going to jump out the fucking window. Even amongst the masters, I'm like, I know you don't go home and practice that. In fact, I know you do the opposite because you're living with a fucking condition that wouldn't allow that. So what are you fucking getting up in front of a room of people and spouting that lie? Why lie? Why perform and lie? It's just a fucking lie. And I don't like it. It's exhausting and boring, the lie. And like, you know, I just think people are full of shit. And I cannot go to somebody's class. And I'd like to be able to. I could practice on my own. I do practice on my own because I can deal with my own shit. But showing up at somebody's class, it's just like all of a sudden my bullshit meter is so fine tuned. It's just such a fine instrument. That if I show up, if I'm even in the presence of somebody that teaches yoga, that thing starts to go off.
So everybody, Kate's bullshit detector is actually a machine. It lives in a closet.
Yeah, no, and I have a travel fanny pack one too.
She has to carry it around with.
No, and then I think, okay, well, who am I to be so judgmental? Who am I? Who am I to be so judgy?
You know, I I went to a class in person Saturday. Was that only last Saturday? God, time is weird. And I have to say, it was really great. It was absolutely not what I would have practiced on that day, but you know, in terms of like the pose content, but it was really wonderful. And it's rare, I mean, you know me, it's really, really, really rare that I go to a class and I'm like, yeah, it was great. And I was reflecting, like, yes, it was great because I think, this was Emily's class at Boston Yoga Union. Hi, Emily. I don't know that you listen, but it was a really lovely class. And, you know, part of the reason it was a really lovely class, I think, was, you know, well, first of all, the thing that everybody had yelled at me for doing for years and years and years and years and years, having people face each other in class. The room was set up that way, and I was like just really like happy about that. And there was just something about like being in a room with people, and people felt comfortable to like ask questions in the space, and you know, it was very conversational and felt very I don't know, it just felt good to be in a space again with folks. In a way that like, now had I gone to a class where someone was like barking orders at me, like I probably would have had a very, very different experience. And let's be fair, like I have been told by folks that like, my presence in class is maybe my experience in class being me is maybe different than other people's experience in classes. Cause I think teachers mostly like leave me alone to like kind of explore on my own within the context of whatever's being offered. But it was just really nice, and like, I really look forward to being in spaces with folks teaching and practicing again. I just the issue that I'm having with the context is not the context of people being in a room together, rolling around on the floor and asking questions and trying new things and playing with prop setups and all of that. The issue with the context, the thing that like burns me out on the teaching, is entirely the background machinations of my relationship to studio owners and how many people can I get into the class and can, how are people paying for class? What is that? Like it, all of that stuff, like that sort of administrative contextual backdrop of how we consume yoga is the thing that kind of like sours me on it. And it's not that, that's not a statement that like yoga should be free. And I'm not that fucking naive, and people try to put that on me all the time. Like, I really just do appreciate the direct exchange of, I walk into a room, and I've said this a million times, I walk up to Barbara, I drop $20 in the bowl at Harvard Street, and I get to learn some yoga for 2 hours, and then I go home. And I know that she's just going to use that money to pay the rent and then pay herself. And like the second we start moving beyond that, I think it gets muddied, not muddied to the point that it's not worth doing, but it starts to get muddied. And it's that I'm wanting folks to reimagine. And I totally understand how hard that is to reimagine when you've got massive overhead to think about. So I'm just going to be the one constantly jumping up and down saying like, let's try something different. Maybe people will, maybe people won't, but, just so that it's not all doom and gloom. Like, I went to a class that I really enjoyed, and I really enjoyed being with people in a room and having, you know, a prolonged conversation about yoga without having to look at a Zoom screen.
I don't know. I don't want to rent a space. I don't want somebody to walk up and feel like they have to put $20 down. I appreciate studios for doing that labor. I'm willing to get paid less so that they do that labor. Losing the thread, and it feels like a loss.
What feels like a loss? Not teaching?
No. I used to enjoy finding pockets of community,
mm-hmm.
that were practicing with, you know, the same group of teachers floating around.
Yeah.
Connecting with each other. And sometimes that was around a studio. Sometimes that was just around a cohort of teachers that all sort of jived.
Yeah.
I miss that. But it really isn't welcoming to bring I'm tired of the fight it takes to be welcome in space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I some of my happiest times at studios were when I was at my most able-bodied, and yeah. I could enjoy the sequences and the work that was being done. And, you know, that's taken from you by most teachers. I lay it at their laps. Mm-hmm. It's taken from you the moment you are unable to perform. And I think most teachers genuinely don't give a shit. And maybe that's not fair. Maybe they do care, but they're just scared to teach something that invites more bodies into the room, whether they're older or injured or sick or fat or thin or whatever. It's not just, you know, I can like take on a couple of those hats, but you know, teachers are terrified. They're terrified of teaching bodies that are not in a very narrow. It's like, if you go to a gymnastics studio and you roll in with a mobility aid, there just isn't that much of a difference between rolling into a studio, a yoga studio for the public.
Sure.
What are we going to do? What are we going to do with this body? We were not prepared. Our practice has not prepared us. Our training has not prepared us. Our marketing has not prepared us. Our business philosophy has not prepared us to deal with anybody that isn't in a very narrow category chapter of their life. And I feel, and I know that you can be a good person and a shitty exclusionary teacher. And so I know a lot of people that are really good people, and they, you know, they just want to teach the ballerinas. But it makes me sad. And I'm just, I think right now at this moment, this morning, I just am mourning. You know, I have spent the last 10 years speaking out and sort of pushing up against that. And I'm just tired of it now. It's like, okay, you don't want us here? Fine.
Yeah.
You don't give a shit? Fine. You do you. One day you're going to wake up injured.
Yeah.
God forbid you're going to get sick. God forbid, you know. But it's going to happen because that's what life does. Yep. So it's just this denial of death. It's teachers denying that they're going to die. And that's why I'm so interested in talking about death in class, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry, rant over. But I'm feeling sad today because I wish that the teachers who have been sick and who are sick would teach with that knowledge rather than hiding it for their own practice. Yeah. I wish that they would teach to the bodies they have now so that other people could experience their wisdom that they gleaned, but instead they're sticking to their old script.
Yeah.
And it's doing us a lot of harm, that cowardice.
Yeah.
Whew. Fucking cowards.
Well, this has been Unrolled.
No, we don't end on Kate calling everyone a coward. Okay, we end on Kate calling everyone a coward.
I think we do. I think there's no other way. There's no pivoting that can occur from there. Okay.
Bye.
I... That was awful.